Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. A lot of people are settling back into the routines for the new year, whether it's going back to work on Monday or students returning to school sometime this month. So really the big question is, how are you feeling? Chances are you or someone you know has been sick these past few weeks. A mix of COVID, flu, and RSV has been flying around, and some have been hit by more than one of these viruses, a triple or double whammy of sorts. And while COVID is nowhere near as bad as it was during the emergency phase here in California, COVID is seeing an uptick coupled with RSV, both of which can be tracked and measured in our wastewater by public health officials. And of course, the historical peak of flu season is upon us. So aside from washing our hands and other common sense precautions, what else can we all do to try and stay healthy? Dr. Dean Blumberg is Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at UC Davis Health, and he is here to walk us through what is going on in 2024. Good morning, Dr. Blumberg.
Good morning, Vicky.
So when I was preparing for our conversation, this month marks 4 years since you and I first talked about COVID. I was a reporter at KCRA, and I was reading back on my reporting. At that time, there was 5 confirmed cases in the United States. To compare, at that time, there were more than 8,000 deaths from influenza. And at that time, we knew, and as you had said, you know, this was a brand new virus. Nobody in the world had been exposed to it. But now 4 years later, did you think that it would exist at varying levels, but this consistently for years to come?
I really didn't know what was going to happen 4 years ago. I mean, that was so novel. Remember back then we were screening people by saying, have you recently been to China, for example? So it hadn't spread everywhere yet. And yet in retrospect, it's inevitable that it would have gotten to everybody because nobody was immune. Everybody was susceptible.
Yeah. How would you describe the current situation in California, you know, especially in our area when it comes to cases of COVID-19, RSV, and the flu? How are we looking?
You know, on the one hand, we are seeing a large increase in the number of COVID cases and flu cases. On the other hand, since most people have some immunity, at least partial immunity to COVID, we're not seeing a large surge in hospital admissions due to COVID. We are seeing some admissions due to influenza. So it is the winter respiratory virus season. It looks like we're seeing a lot of admissions for winter respiratory viruses now. And as you mentioned, a lot of people in the community are sick.
Although RSV has been around for, you know, for quite some time, you know, I feel like the general public has become more aware of RSV, you know, in the last year or two, you know, during this time of a pandemic. Has the risk of RSV, especially to babies, younger children, and older adults, has it become more of a public health risk?
I think we became more aware of it because of the pandemic, when we saw historically low rates of transmission of respiratory viruses like RSV due to the COVID measures. And then when we came out of all the lockdown and mandatory masking, then we saw a really catching up with RSV. So we really did see a large increase in RSV. And in addition to that, we've got increasing research showing that RSV not only is a problem for babies and children, but it causes significant morbidity and mortality in older adults.
So overall, I mean, especially compared to a couple of years ago, I mean, these levels are nowhere near that. But, you know, I also remember years, I think it was like in 2017 or 2018, there was a really, really bad flu season and ICUs were really full. Now, 2024, we not only have the flu, we also have two other respiratory viruses. As you know, we stayed at home for a couple of years and now these cases or infections are rebounding. How does that complicate what y'all do at the hospital?
You know, I think one of the main things that we've learned with the pandemic is that the main thing that we need to be aware of is hospital capacity. And so that's why we really needed all those dramatic actions early in the pandemic, because we saw all over the world that hospitals were full. There was no place for patients to go when they were sick, and people died because of that. And so we're really closely monitoring hospital capacity. And that's what we did here in Sacramento. All the hospitals in Sacramento cooperated with Sacramento County Public Health to monitor bed capacity last year when we had the so-called triple-demic, just to try to facilitate that so that we did, if people needed to be in the hospital, that we would know where the beds were.
What does hospital capacity look like in our area right now?
You know, I don't know about all the hospitals in the area, but I know at UC Davis, we still have hospital capacity. capacity. We're not over full. It's not a crisis situation, so we certainly have availability. And whereas last year, things were very tight with RSV and with such a high volume of cases of RSV. So this year, we've got, of course, the new RSV monoclonal antibody, the vaccine that we can give children, and there's been some shortages of it, but people really want to get it. Doctors really want to give that to kids, and parents want that. They're aware that RSV can cause hospitalizations, can cause serious disease in babies, and so we've really seen a good demand for it, even though this is just the first year that it's been available.
Right. Vaccines are an important tool in this. So there's a vaccine for RSV. Obviously, there's a vaccine for COVID-19, you know, and following, you know, it was a really strong rollout in early 2021, but vaccination rates have significantly dropped off with as new variants and new versions of the vaccine, coupled with also there's the flu shot, which has existed for a long time now. What do vaccination rates look like now when it comes to COVID and flu?
You know, flu vaccines seem to have peaked at about 50% of eligible patients getting flu vaccine. So, you know, that's not great, but it's better than with COVID vaccine. The updated booster, less than 20% of people in the U.S. have received that. And, you know, that's a real concern because there are people who are still at significant risk of severe disease and dying. And I would hope that they would take advantage of getting the vaccine. Even with the new variant that's circulating, the current vaccine looks like it reduces hospitalization by about 60%.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think vaccine rates for COVID-19 have dropped that significantly over the years?
I think part of it was that it wasn't seasonal. We just seem to be constantly being hit over the head year round, that there's a new variant, there's a new vaccine, get vaccinated again. That gets really tiresome. I think if we settle more into the seasonal pattern where it's a once a year thing, if COVID ends up being more seasonal, which we do expect that it's going to be a winter respiratory virus, I think hopefully it'll become more routine and then people won't be so tired of it. It'll become routine. Just get your flu shot, get your COVID shot, and hopefully we can at least get up to the 50% vaccination rates that we have with influenza.
When it comes to how we could track, you know, COVID-19, I mean, a couple years ago, like everyone was doing, or a lot of people were doing testing. I don't know if that's necessarily the case now. So how are public health officials getting an accurate snapshot of what rates of COVID-19 and even, you know, RSV look like?
You know, it's really hard to tell these days because home tests, of course, you know, a lot of people test at home and we don't know what those results are. So there's two main ways that public health can figure out the level of COVID in the community. And one is by looking at hospital admissions, but that'll, of course, only tell you about severe cases. And the other is the wastewater surveillance. And that appears to be very promising. That's a really new tool that we have. And, you know, according to the current wastewater surveillance that is going around with COVID now, it looks like this is going to be the second largest wave of COVID since the pandemic began.
Wow. How does that make you feel as a public health official who's been talking about this? You know, that, you know, 4 years in, you know, we're kind of rivaling numbers from, you know, the worst of it.
It makes me nervous because I know it's on the rise. And with the JN.1, the current variant that's on the increase, this was predicted to be the week or two after Christmas that we would start seeing this surge. So it does make me, you know, be a little bit on edge. I'm hoping that we don't have a lot of hospital admissions. And of course, because most people do have some immunity, you know, the hope is that most of these cases are relatively mild, that they're outpatient, that they're more annoyances rather than resulting in killing people.
Another tool of this on the back end, if you actually do get sick, you know, in the immediate days is Paxlovid. Mm-hmm. That is an antiviral treatment. Of course, you have Tamiflu as well for influenza. You know, are those being utilized to the best of their capabilities?
Not as much as they should be. I really encourage people, if they do have COVID, call your healthcare provider, you know, get Paxlovid. We know that it reduces hospital admissions by more than 50%. You know, even for young people who may have no comorbidities and might not be at increased risk, it'll still decrease the length of the illness. And it's no fun being sick. So why not get better faster. And the same with influenza. The challenge more with influenza is that people don't have the at-home tests as much. They are available. You can get them, but they're quite expensive. They're not widely available. So most people have to go to their healthcare provider to get tested for influenza. But again, you know, Tamiflu, the ulcetamivir, that works very well to decrease the length of the illness. And so I think it's certainly worth considering.
And both would you recommend for anyone if they end up coming down with something, or is it just for, you know, the most severe potential cases? Would you recommend that for all ages?
Well, certainly anybody who's at risk for more severe disease due to age or comorbidities should be tested and consider antiviral treatment. But anybody who wants to reduce the length of their illness, even if they aren't at increased risk, it's worthwhile to get tested.
Are there any side effects that someone should be aware of?
You know, the ulcetamivir, the Tamiflu, has very few side effects and is generally well tolerated. The Paxlovid does have some drug interactions, and most of these can be managed. So you just need to talk with your doctor or pharmacist, and they can tell you how to manage those drug interactions.
And there's an expiration date, right? Like, you need to get it within a certain time period of coming down with some symptoms.
Both those antivirals work better the sooner after the illness starts than later. And if you start it too late, it doesn't have that much of a benefit. So that's always a little bit of a trick, right? Because you become sick and you're thinking, well, maybe this will go away, so I'm not going to get tested or call my doctor. And then if you wait too long, then the antiviral doesn't work anymore.
I guess the really unfortunate reality is some people can actually come down with more than one of these, you know, over the winter season, and that has happened. Can you explain what co-infections are and how these can take place?
Yeah, we've certainly seen that a lot with children, too, where you can get COVID and RSV at the same time, COVID and flu at the same time. And you can get them more than once during the season. For COVID, you're generally protected for 3 to 6 months after you're infected. But RSV, you can certainly get that twice in a season. And with influenza, there's generally 3 strains of influenza that circulate every year. And so even if you get one, it's still worthwhile to be vaccinated after that so that you don't get the other two.
You know, if you get one respiratory virus, say you got it over like Thanksgiving, like COVID, does it make you more susceptible to contracting another, like RSV or the flu?
Most of the time when you get a respiratory virus, the main complication I worry about is a bacterial superinfection. So that if you get influenza, that could predispose you to bacterial pneumonia or some other complication like ear infections or sinusitis. Usually it doesn't predispose you to get another viral infection.
Aside from obviously washing your hands, you know, for 20, 30 seconds, you know, I count the alphabet. What advice do you have for individuals in this time, there's still risk of getting a respiratory virus, but, you know, obviously the landscape, how we interact with each other has changed drastically in the last couple years. So how do you advise your patients?
You know, especially for those who are vulnerable, who are more at risk for severe disease, I continue to recommend masking. So mask when you're out doing errands, when you're going to the store, even when you're outdoors, for example, at the farmer's market, where you're in close proximity to others, that can help protect you. And avoid sick people. I mean, sick people are out there and you see them. They're like coughing, sneezing. I don't want to be around them.
Yeah. No, me either. I completely agree with that. You know, given also that the current situations, when it comes to recommendations, you know, in light of just the fact that things have, you know, at least on the surface, returned to normal, and also a key component of this is in California, COVID sick leave, it expired last year. So, you know, some people are going to go to work, you know, they have to make money. You know, what recommendations do you have for people who think they might be experiencing symptoms but don't know, and you know, how they should navigate that?
You know, that can be very difficult because a lot of the symptoms of COVID or flu can overlap with other symptoms, for example, of allergy, for example. So, you know, most people know if they have an allergic reaction, if they're having something. Most people have them because of exposures, because of seasonality, or because they go visit the neighbor's cat or something like that. If you don't know, if there's any uncertainty, then the safest thing to do is get tested, and then you'll know.
When it comes to an expired test, are they still okay to use? Because sometimes they just kind of stack up in your bathroom.
Yeah, that's happened with us too. Yeah, you got to look them up. So they put the expiration dates on them before they know when they're going to expire. But some of the manufacturers continue to test them past that expiration date, and they'll post those online. So if you scan the QR code on them that should bring you up to an update to see if they are continue to use them.
I remember that I believe flu season usually like peaks at around January or February. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, usually January through March is the traditional peak of flu season.
So we may potentially still be in the thick of this. You know, we haven't like kind of hit the peak and now we're kind of, you know, hopefully getting to, you know, a healthier state. We are still in the middle of this.
Yeah, what we're seeing is the rate certainly going up and we're seeing a very high rate of illness in California in general. Mm.
Dr. Blumberg, as always, thank you.
Thank you. Stay healthy.
You as well. Dr. Dean Blumberg is the chief of pediatric infectious diseases at UC Davis Health. Up next, the case of a former UC Davis student charged in a deadly stabbing spree is going back to trial. We'll hear how competency was restored in the courtroom and what the future trial may look like. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.